program are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of IRN, its advertisers, or affiliates.
Dr. Stan back here at Video Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for this hour, we're going to forego our Wednesday night open lines because I wanted you to hear the story I heard this morning from John Quirk. John has spent many years working for the intelligence agencies. He's retired now, but he still has contacts throughout the world, and he's just back from a six-week trip to Europe, to the Near East, to parts of Central Asia, and certainly talking to people in Europe about where we're headed as far as the Near East and the Middle East is concerned. John has very strong views, and they parallel my own, but of course his are based upon personal contacts. So I asked John if he'd be willing to come on this evening and share what he has learned from people living in the Middle East and Asia, certainly in the Near East and in Europe, about what is about to happen. John, thank you so very much for being with us.
Good evening, Stan. It's a pleasure always to be with you.
Well, why don't you just tell us, first of all, where you were, who you talked to, or as much as you can. I know some of the names you can't put out there, but what is their feeling about the stability, of course?
Well, I was in London. I was in the Near East. I was in France. I was in London, as a matter of fact, when these terrorists, the doctor's plot, if you will, try to explode some bombs, and England has some terrible problems with a number of Arab terrorist cells there. But I was talking mainly on my favorite subject lately, Iran, and what's going to happen, to a number of different people, including members of the Iranian opposition, intelligence officers, friends of mine in Israel, Azerbaijan, in the whole area. And when I was gone, I see that President Bush actually sent a third carrier task force into the region. We now have the Enterprise supporting the Stennis and the Nimitz, and we're building up tremendously there. It's a tremendous show of force. Some of my Israeli friends feel that time is running out for an Iran strike, and that probably what's happening in this whole conflagration that's starting, I think my earlier predictions of end of July or August are coming forward. It seems that the United States is in the process of actually doing several things to provoke Iran. It's interesting because there's a lot of parallels between the August 1964 Gulf of Tonkin resolution, if people can remember back that far, where supposedly North Vietnamese patrol boats had attacked a U.S. destroyer, and then the Senate responded by voting 88, I think, to 1 or 2 to authorize President Johnson to go into Vietnam. Then the bombing of the North began, followed by the U.S. Marines, and the similarities are amazing because our Congress today, the Senate, already voted 97-0 to censor Iran for complicity in killing Americans. So the United States actually has the proof. I think Congress is on board, even though they're out of session, as Congress was out of session during the Gulf of Tonkin in August of 1964. As I said, there's a lot of parallels. So I think the United States and Israel and support of our European allies, support of Congress, and a number of the Arab states around Iran, Azerbaijan.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead, John.
So I think Azerbaijan, Saudi Arabia, and the rest are lobbying the Bush administration. And I think the Bush administration is also involved. A lot of people don't know this, but we're involved in covert actions against Iran, inside Iran. The other day, one of our top secret intelligence services, the National Reconnaissance Office, either released or leaked some satellite shots of the new Iranian enrichment facility at Natanz, Iran, and it showed tunnels and other facilities that are being designed to be hidden and protect key nuclear components. So the Iranians are getting ready. They are preparing for the possibility of war. They've just received new Russian air defense systems. And one of the strange problems in dealing with Iran is that the Iranians do not believe that the United States or Israel are in a position of strength that would enable the U.S. to launch a airstrike or naval strike against them.
And of course, I think that that's really very foolish. We have some difficulty with our army as far as Iraq is concerned, but we have certainly the mightiest armada of ships and of planes, and my understanding is they're actually moving increasing numbers of Air Force planes into bases both in Iraq and certainly in the surrounding countries in preparation for this coming strike on Iran.
Well, actually, in the United States, the inventory and the ordnance is pretty substantial. We have 160,000 troops in Iraq. We probably have special forces troops on the border of Iran or inside Iran. We have whole squadrons of F-22s, B-1 bombers, B-52 bombers already. They've been ready for a couple months. The Third Carrier Task Force, the Enterprise Task Force, is awesome. It's comprised of new Arleigh Burke destroyers, submarines, battleships to support the Stennis and the forgot the name of the other one. I think it's the Eisenhower group.
We have the Nimitz, the Stennis, and then the Kursk.
Excuse me, it's the Nimitz, the Stennis, and the Enterprise. That's right.
Right.
The Eisenhower is farther outside in the Indian Ocean, but they all have tremendous firepower and naval forces, airplanes. They have, besides the carriers, they have submarines.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John is simply pointing out that right now we have this tremendous concentration of the firepower in the Persian Gulf with the Nimitz and the Stennis. And these are carrier task forces, not just the carriers, but all the ancillary vessels that go with them. And, of course, the Enterprises will be there, if not now, within another week. And then, of course, we have other naval task force that could be brought in within a relatively few days. And we're building up our Air Force personnel, building up our Air Force support units. In that area, tremendous concentration of firepower. And for all intents and purposes, with the Senate supporting unanimously Senator Lieberman's request for a censure of Iran last week for complicity and involvement in the murder of American servicemen, despite all the posturing in the Senate and, oh my goodness, we got to do something, we're going to debate all night, they've given the president a green light to go ahead in Iran, and now they're going home.
That's right. In fact, you can ask the question, why is Congress going on vacation? And why is the democratically controlled House and Senate not asking various other questions regarding Iran and Iraq in public hearings? Well, I think Congress is in on it. Congress has decided to support the president against Iran. there's more and more evidence that the Iranians were behind the attack that killed five American soldiers in January, and that some of our provocations are working because July 11th and 12th, Iranian troops actually fought Kurdish rebels inside Iran, and the Iranians fired artillery barrages back into Iraq. So the whole region is basically ready to explode. On the Israeli side, they're very worried about Hamas's takeover of Gaza. The United States and Israel have shipped arms and money to the Palestinians in the West Bank. And there's more and more evidence about Hezbollah's role in receiving tremendous amounts of new Shabbat missiles from Iran, and Hezbollah's role in possibly training terrorists that are working inside Iraq. So the bad guys here are Syria, Iran, and Hezbollah, as well as Al-Qaeda. It's kind of a weird situation because Al-Qaeda, fights the Shiites in Iran. They've never had any use for them. And the Iran's ally, the Maliki government, is the U.S. ally. And Iran's enemy, which is Al-Qaeda in Iraq, is the U.S. enemy. So there's all kinds of things going on. You might say, why would the Iranian Revolutionary Guards try to attack Americans and risk U.S. retaliation? Killing Americans in Iraq is certainly not going to defeat the United States, but it could trigger heavy U.S. retaliation, and I think that's what the Bush administration is probably counting on. So, and that's a precursor to eliminating Iran's nuclear facilities. And my Israeli friends are very worried lately. They've been pretty quiet the last few months, but lately they're very, very worried because they feel that time is running out for airstrikes against Iran and that we have to do something now. I think I'm going to stick to my earlier predictions. I think that the Israelis are going to probably try to start something with the Syrians and try to wipe out Hezbollah at the end of July, beginning of August. And that'll be another reason for the United States to go in and at least use airstrikes and naval strikes against the Iranian nuclear facilities.
And, of course, one of the things is apparently Syria has a lot of rather sophisticated missiles that it's been getting from Russia and by way of Iran. And, of course, I suspect a lot of those missiles were built with American technology, but that's neither here nor there. But, of course, Israel cannot have Syria there with sophisticated missiles. They can hit not only Tel Aviv, but hit their air bases where their air force, the Israeli air force, is centered, and that is certainly their most effective weapon. So there's really going to have to be almost a massive attack on Syria to take out their military potential before it's used against Israel, and I don't think there's any question that that Syria is preparing for war. We've talked to people over there in Israel. They're up in the Golan Heights, tremendous military preparations taking place there at the present time, and on the other side of the border in Syria, they're preparing for war as well. And here at home, most people are just excited that we're going to have the football season's going to be opening before long. And it's sort of like, well, in many respects, like it was just a few days before the advent of the Second World War in America. Nobody really thought that this could ever happen.
Yes, and there's two myths here that I'd like to talk about. There's a myth in the Iranian world, and there's a myth in the Arab world, and that myth is that the United States is weak and that the Islamic fundamentalist terrorists are winning. This is a very strong belief that Iranians have, the Revolutionary Guards have. They think we're really getting wiped out in Iraq, which is just not true. They believe that the West is losing, that Israel, because of the failed incursion last year, is on the ropes, They see Hamas winning in Gaza. They see disarray with the Palestinians, and they're putting two and two together, and they're getting one. And there's a, this is true with Al-Qaeda. This is true information that we're getting defectors from the Iranian military. We're getting defectors from the Palestinians. We're getting defectors from even some of the terrorist groups in Iraq. And there is this belief that the United States and the West are losing and Islamic fundamentalism is winning. That is farther from the truth. The second myth is that the United States is weak economically and economically and militarily, especially because of the trouble we're having in Iraq. So these two things, these two myths, that the United States is weak militarily and that we're actually losing in the Mideast, have energized the Syrians. It's energized the leadership in Iran. Not all the people in Iran believe it. And it's energized Hezbollah that gets money and aid and missiles from Iran through Syria. So all the conditions are there for a war. And, you know, there's a lot of talk that the Iranians really want to engage in diplomacy, that they want to settle the problems. Even some of the Israelis believe that there's still a chance that if we get tough with Iran and we move the carrier task force in and we deploy large military forces and they see all of our bombers and Diego Garcia and our troops in Bahrain and on our ships, that there's a chance that there'll be a prevention for a future clash with a nuclear Iran. But the Iranians don't really seem to take it serious. They see that their Islamic government is threatened and that they must go forward and develop nuclear weapons. Now, one of the credible pieces of intelligence that's coming out of Israel, and I trust their intelligence in this area even better than ours, is that the Iranians have accelerated their enrichment facility at Natanz. They've, even though they're hiding some of their centrifuges, that they're very, very close to having enough plutonium to make about 30 Hiroshima-type bombs. So that concerns the Israelis. The other thing that concerns the Israelis is the energy that Gaza has taken on because of the Hamas victory and the apparent weakness of Fatah, the Palestinian. So all of these things add up to crisis, the failure of diplomacy, the failure of talking, and the goal of the Bush administration to take out the third axis of evil, Iran.
Well, now, what about Russia? Will Russia intervene? What about China? Do we have any sort of agreements with those countries that will allow us to go after and attack Iran?
Yes, well, for the last, up until, I would say, May to maybe June, even as late as June 1st, or you could probably put a better date when Mr. Putin from Russia came over to talk to our president, Mr. Bush, in Maine. The Russians and the Chinese, you know, have voted against us. They were against sanctions against Iran. They did not want us to conduct military operations. That's all gone by the wayside because we've made a deal with Iran. We've made a deal with Russia. And the deal is this, that we go in and take out the airstrikes and the Gulf is bottled up, which the Russians are hoping for, the Russians are going to make billions of dollars in selling energy to Europe, who they've been extorting anyway. And this is what Putin wants.
And basically you're saying that the price of oil is going to skyrocket in Europe as well as here.
And the Russians have used oil as extortion against the Poles last year and against the English, and they're just going to benefit. They're going to benefit from it in a couple ways. They've already been paid by the Iranians. The Russians shipped very sophisticated air defense systems to Iran. The Iranians are using them in fortifying their nuclear facilities and research bunkers in preparation for a attack by the United States. And secondly, the Russians have supplied very sophisticated missiles to some of the older Iranian subs that could possibly sink our carriers. Now, there's also rumors that Mr. Putin has given some of the intelligence on the air defense systems and those missiles that he sold the Iranians to Mr. Bush. But the Russians are basically on board. They're not going to object to try to stop us from going into Iran.
Hold that, Ruth. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, John, what about China, though? China certainly is a major player in that part of the world.
Yes, well, China is the cause of a lot of the problems in the Mideast, especially to Iran.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Some of those weapons certainly are ship-to-ship weapons, could either be placed onto the outdated Iranian submarines, or certainly these whole fleet of very fast little boats. They can swarm our carriers and have a devastating effect on our fleet. But the other thing is, of course, China. And John says that an agreement has been made with China. We will guarantee their oil during this short little battle. Our leaders think this is going to be a very, very short time and a few days, and then it'll all be over. But as John points out, you never know what's going to happen. What, of course, you start a war. And so there could be a tremendous retaliation. What about our troops over in Iraq? The Iranians certainly have an army of about 1 million people. Do you think that they would be a tall load if we started killing their people and destroying their facilities to unleash that army, that million-man army, on our 160,000 men there in Iraq?
I think they would do it. I think that's one of our weak points. Even though we have 160,000 men there, and we've rushed over new Apache helicopters and squadrons of these new Predator pilotless planes, and we even have B-52s bomb them, you know, I'm not sure we, based on the Iran-Iraq war, I'm not sure 160,000 U.S. troops would be able to stop a million-man army, even though we bomb them and try to interrupt what they're doing. So no one really knows. I mean, the analysts have different stories. Some say there's no way the Iranians would attack into Iraq. Others think that they would. I believe they would. I believe that they would engage in terrorism. And I believe that they would throw a lot of their efforts in supporting Syria and Hezbollah to inflict tremendous casualties on the Israelis. And this is another thing the Iranians think they're going to do. And remember, the Iranians, they're Muslims, but they're not Arabs. And the Arabs in Saudi Arabia have always had trouble with them. They hate them. The Turks have had trouble with them. The Azerbaijanis and other Arab or Muslim nations that aren't Persian have had trouble with the Iranians. And the Iranians could do a lot of what we would consider very erratic things. They could attack the Saudi oil fields. They've said as much that they would do that. They would attack our carriers. I think we would take out their Navy in about 2 hours and their Air Force in about 2 hours, and we might do that initially. And I think you'll start to see that happen now because, like the Gulf of Tonkin, I think President Bush is looking for a provocation because we are running out of time. And besides all these issues that seem confusing, you know, Hamas in Gaza, the Palestinians not doing well in the West Bank, the fact that Hezbollah has new missiles from Syria, the whole goal of this thing is to eliminate the Iranian nuclear threat. And also, part of the reasoning for this is that there's more and more evidence that the Iranians are supplying IEDs and supplying and supporting Hezbollah to train and kill our troops within Iraq. And to me, that makes a lot of sense in relationship to the U.S. Congress's behavior, because even though Bush faces growing doubts on Iraq, the Democrats, as much as they are opposed to keeping our troops in Iraq, do not want to go down as a political party that abandoned our 160,000 soldiers to Iranian IEDs. So I think the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress have closed ranks and they've said, look, it's a fait accompli. We've got Israel here. We've got Saudi Arabia, our other allies. We have to stop Iran right now in the next 2 months.
Yeah, but of course, if Iran were to, of course, attack Saudi Arabia's oil facilities there, you know, along the Persian Gulf, well, this could have a tremendous impact, perhaps not so much on us, but on the world price of oil and certainly on Europe's access to oil and China's access to oil. I mean, if the war were over in 4 or 5 days or a week, as our leaders envision, why, that would certainly not disrupt the oil supplies for a long time, but what happens if the war were to go on for months or even for years? With oil at $150 a barrel. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is John Quirk. John, go ahead, pick the story up there.
Well, if you look at a map of the whole region, you're absolutely right. I mean, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iraq produce tremendous amounts of oil. Iran used to, but their oil production is down, and the mullahs really don't care about it. And bordering Iran, you have Pakistan and Afghanistan. Things are not going that great in Afghanistan. The Taliban is coming back with a vengeance. Pakistan has tremendous problems in the Musharraf government, so that also encourages Iran to stand up to the United States. They think they're winning. This whole concept that they're winning in Afghanistan, Islamic fundamentalism is winning in Baluchistan and Pakistan. They never liked the Saudis anyway. So it would have a war that went on past 2 weeks and even into a couple months, and even the effects of the war, even if the war were over a couple weeks, it would certainly affect the European economy, and that means tourism. People would stop traveling. The European economy is starting to do very well. The dollar is taking a beating. That would probably turn around. There would be certainly interdiction. No oil would come out of Iraq or Kuwait. I mean, there's no real pipelines that would be able to get through. There's one through Turkey, but it's pretty far. You can't put oil through Syria and Jordan. So Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iraq's oil would be interdicted. Iranian oil production would be stopped. And then, of course, the Azerbaijanis that produce a lot of oil and are very pro-U.S. up in the Caspian Sea, their oil might be affected because, in fact, the Iranians could attack their facilities around Baku. They would attack Kuwait. They would try to attack Saudi Arabia. And today, the Saudis and Kuwaitis and Azerbaijanis, they're all building up against Iran. So the tension is rising. Our analysts feel that a short war eventually would really benefit the superpower status of the United States, because if we stop Iran's nuclear development, there could be a possibility of regime change. And then the United States would really control all the oil, not just in Iraq and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Azerbaijan, but we would have access to oil in the Central Asia, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and so on and so forth. So,
hold that thought.
All being planned.
Hold that thought right there, John. We'll be back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly John thinks that our planners feel that a very, very short war, with the devastation of Iran and knocking out their facilities, and then, of course, we could all go home, and certainly there might be even regime change in Iran in a relatively short period of time. People would become disaffected with the government that had failed, and so certainly if that were to occur, why, America would then be able to control the oil in Iraq and certainly the oil in Iran and much of the oil coming out of the Caspian Sea area, this great wealth of oil in that whole area. We would dominate that whole region of the world, which has long been the plan of our rulers, those who have not read the book, The Grand Chessboard, by Zbigniew Brzezinski, written in 1997, need to get it and read it. But what happens if our planners are wrong? And, of course, this war drags on, not simply for weeks, but for months or even longer. And what would happen? And, of course, this is something that is a very real threat, and nobody wants to talk about it. What would happen if those outdated, outmoded Iranian submarines with their sophisticated weapons they got from Russia and all of their little tiny boats that they have, very, very rapid, fast little boats should swarm our carriers if we were to lose an aircraft carrier or two aircraft carriers.
Well,
what would that do?
It's a good question. There's actually two areas of that. I think that if the war were to continue, as you're suggesting, doing a scenario on that, past, say, 2 to 3 weeks, our stock market would tank, the housing market, which is bad in many parts of the country, wouldn't get any better. Oil prices, gasoline prices would go up. It would affect the economy. I think the Chinese would be very, very angry at us, even though they caused a lot of these problems. Their economy might tank, and that would affect our economy and what they own. They own us in terms of the kind of money that they've been investing in the United States. And then there would be a larger, there's a possibility with the Iranians, like a larger regional war that could spread into Kurdistan. The Turks would be upset. The Jordanians would be upset. It could expand, possibly overthrow the government in Pakistan. There's a variety of issues that would happen here. And I think that if we lost a carrier, the United States, the military would demand tremendous retaliation, and that could expand the war. And what that retaliation would be is nonstop bombing of Iranian cities and wiping out Hezbollah in Lebanon and possibly giving tremendous assistance to the Israelis to overthrow and bomb the heck out of Syria. So those are all potential scenarios that could happen.
And I think these are things that the administration is not looking at. I think that, as John had said earlier, about 50 generals and admirals who are telling the Bush administration they think this is a terrible idea. I know Seymour Hersh had written an article in the New York here about 2 months ago, and he said a number of our generals and admirals have said they're simply going to resign from the military if the Bush administration does launch an attack on Iran, because the military knows what's being planned. The average American has no glimpse at all of what's really going on behind the scenes, as certainly both political parties are rallying behind the president as we prepare for the next step in this worldwide drive against the Muslim world. And I share your concerns. Do you think that they're going to get by with simply a six-day war, or do you think this could simply go on? Because, as you said in your private correspondence to me, if this, were to go 3 or 4 weeks, it could have a profound impact on every aspect of our economy.
Well, I think it'll go beyond 6 days for several reasons. One, there are 6 to 10 major nuclear sites in Iran that have centrifuges, plutonium, enriched uranium. These particular sites are also, the Iranians are fortifying and moving key elements of these nuclear research facilities into underground bunkers, basically telling the Americans and the Israelis that even if you attack us, they're deep down, you're not going to do anything. The second thing is there's 50 other research sites we'd have to take out. And then the third level, there's a total of 1,500 places that they're working on nuclear research. So here's the danger. If we take out 6 or 50 and then we pull out, it would be a 6-day war. That's it. The other problems, however, is what the Iranians would do. I wrote an article about a year ago on Iran's defensive strategy and what they would do to us. And they would engage in terrorism. They've accelerated. They could possibly accelerate the development of several, up to 5 nuclear bombs, coupled with the deployment strategy of missile technology that they've gained from Pakistan, China, and North Korea. And these missiles are now capable of being equipped with nuclear weapons that could hit Israel or London or 7th, 5th Fleet targets. Iran also has fully trained and equipped terrorists probably in the United States. They're in Venezuela. They're probably got cells in Mexico and Canada. The third thing is they could strike at targets within Europe to split us from Europe. Europe is facing all kinds of problems with Islamic fundamentalists already. So Iranians have every intention of retaliating against an attack on their soil against us, against the Saudis, against the Israelis. So this would all happen if the war went past, say, 6 days. Okay. The other thing that's a big problem, there doesn't seem to be a mechanism for diplomacy or talking. There's no intermediaries between Iran and the United States. There's no arbitrators, if you will. So once you start a war like this, it might be like the Guns of August that Barbara Tuchman wrote so brilliantly about World War One. Once you start a war like this, and it was started over, World War One was started over the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and it spread from Austria to Germany to Russia to England and France, and eventually the United States was in it. You might not be able to start this cataclysm. And the whole region is really like a tinderbox. If you go back to a map, you've got Pakistan, which is having trouble with their own fundamentalists. North of them, you have Afghanistan, where we and NATO have troops, and we're like holding our own. The Taliban is coming back. You have the Revolutionary Guards in Iran that are pushing for a Shiite kind of arc between Iran, Iraq, overthrowing the Lebanese government and having Syria as an ally. So you have a big Syria, that's what they want, a Shia arc. And then you've got these crazy fundamentalists in Iran that also believe that the Mahdi is coming back August 22nd. And the precursor to that is that they have to wipe out the Jews. So you've got a lot of irrational things going on with irrational people. On the American side, we're kind of technocrats. You know, we take a slide rule and we say, well, look, if you do this and you drop this number of bombs and you have this number of cruise missiles attacking Shiraz and Esfahan and possibly some of the facilities around Tehran, the war will be over very quickly. But I don't think it's going to work out that way if the war continues past 6 days. I think there's a great danger of a wider regional war taking place in that part of the world.
And, of course, the thing that bothers me, of course, you don't need an intercontinental ballistic missile to be able to hit the United States with missiles. Certainly Iran has ships. A trapped steamer going up either the west coast or the east coast of our country could certainly, with a very, very short-range missile, hit New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles. And people say, well, that would never happen. It wouldn't happen here. And I'd like to know why it wouldn't happen. If we attack Iran and kill a lot of their people, is there any reason anybody would think that they would not retaliate? I mean, a war is an irrational thing to begin with. And there's certainly, once you start a war, you never know how it's going to end. Certainly if the German Kaiser and the Emperor of Austria-Hungary had realized where the First World War was going to end, they never would have let the war start. And this, similarly, I think the people of Europe realized how many people were going to perish in the Second World War. They would have done everything they could to avoid it. And really my fear is that once we let this war get started, and apparently our legislators, now with the crisis approaching, they've all taken off on vacation, and our congressmen and our senators will be sitting at home and say, oh, shucks, there was nothing we could do. We were on vacation.
Well, that's right. That's exactly the way we are today, and we were in August of 64 in the Gulf of Tonkin. The other thing you brought up before about the United States possibly using tactical nuclear weapons, the Israelis have them. And they've been training with the British Air Force in Gibraltar and other parts where British have bases. And they would not hesitate to use nuclear weapons if they see that their country is starting to lose. And the Iranians have caused this imbalance of power. They've accelerated and changed the balance of power, because right after the incursion that Israel did in Lebanon, the unsuccessful incursion last summer to get their hostages back, the Iranians have gone forward and given military advisors to Hezbollah. They've co-opted parts of the Lebanese government. They've basically intimidated a lot of the 11,000 European peace keepers there that keep the Israelis and Hezbollah against each other. And they've supplied Hezbollah with thousands of these Iranian Shabbat missiles that can target Israel in places they could never target before. So you have to say, well, why are the Iranians doing all this? They're accelerating their nuclear plans. There's no negotiation for them to give up their nuclear plans. Nobody likes the Iranians. The Europeans are fed up with them. The Turks and Saudis and Kuwaitis are fed up with them. Only the Maliki Shiite government seems to be, the ones that we support, seem to be getting along with the Iranians. The Iranians are helping the Taliban in Afghanistan. They're probably, their intelligence service, which is first rate, by the way, is probably helping Pakistani fundamentalists try to get rid of Musharraf. So they're looking for it. They're asking for it. They have a chance. They still have a chance to give up their nuclear research and their nuclear weapons development. And if they do, they'll avoid a war. But if they don't, I think the United States has no other choice than to take out their nuclear facilities.
Well, of course, traditionally, whenever we've gone to war with another country, whether it be Europe or Vietnam, it was, well, that was another continent. It in no way could possibly affect us here at home. And the average American has no idea what war is really all about, other than what they've seen on television. But now, of course,
and the Iranian, you know, you're talking about possible strikes against the United States.
Remember, Venezuela.
Yes, that's right. And Iran has made non-aggression pacts with Chavez in Venezuela. Hezbollah has an office there. They have two offices in Venezuela, one in Caracas and one at some training base in the jungle. There's large numbers of Iranians in Venezuela. They've signed all kinds of so-called commercial agreements with the Iranians, shipping agreements, container agreements, which is pretty scary, because they could put, you know, a bomb in a container and ship it to the port of Miami, and we probably, you know, wouldn't know about it. And Chavez is not; he's very vocal about destroying the United States. So we have this threat. And I think that's another reason that you have to stop a country like Iran from developing nuclear weapons, because they could give it to Hezbollah, they could give it to Islamic Jihad, they could give it to a lot of the newer no-name terrorist groups, they might be able to get it to, secretly get it to Chavez in Venezuela, he hates the United States, they could give it to Hamas, so this is the big danger, and I think the tip of the spear point against Iran is going to be Israel. Not a direct Israeli attack against Iran, but also a provocation or an all-out attack against Syria by Israel. And as that accelerates, the United States will be forced to come in. And we will not come in against Syria or Hezbollah. We will come in against Iran.
And, of course, what I'm hearing from my friends in Israel today is that Israel is preparing for war with Syria. They think that there will be a war with Syria within the next month or two.
Yes, I think it's going to happen probably end of July, or possibly drag out a little bit in the beginning August. The head of Israeli military intelligence, their research division, a man named Yossi Cooperwasser, I know him and his wife, they're both Israeli intelligence officers, said recently that the time to launch a very good military strike against Iran is running out, that we're very close to the point where we won't be able to do it because the Iranians are in the process of having enough technological ability to enrich uranium and make several bombs in a very short period of time. Now, the time issue is debatable. The CIA says they won't have that ability for 5 years. The Israelis are saying, hey, the most it's going to take them is 2 years, maybe three. So, I've heard from Iranians that they are very close to the point of already having nuclear weapons. Well, so this is the danger.
Now, these Iranians are part of the resistance to the current regime, though. Are they dependable?
Yes, but you also have to take that with a grain of salt because most of the Iranian opposition, including the people I deal with, are penetrated by Iranian intelligence. So
okay.
Some of the people we deal with are double agents, and you know they could be giving us misinformation or disinformation.
All right. Well, I guess this evening has been John Quirk. And, of course, how can people get in touch with your blog?
They can send things to my email, irgglobal@aol.com, and I do apologize. I owe some of my articles to some of your other viewers, and I plan to get them out in the next couple of days.
All right, fine. That's irgglobal.com.
irgglobal@aol.com.
AOL.com, right. All right, fine. I guess, of course, it's been John Quirk, and it's really been a fascinating time. And, of course, I think that the American people had better wake up to the fact that there is the potential. I mean, we're talking within a matter of weeks or months where we could be plunged into a war, and hope and pray if we do have a war, it'll be a very short one. But what happens, as so often happens with wars, is they don't go exactly the way we've been promised or told they would. Well, John, do you have a parting thought for our listeners tonight?
Well, I would say just watch the news and the newspapers of things related to Israel, Syria, and Iran. And if you want to read parallels, read a book called The Guns of August about World War One, or just type in Gulf of Tonkin, and you'll see the amazing parallels between the Gulf of Tonkin provocation that got us into the Vietnam War and what's happening now with the Bush administration and Congress in relationship to a potential war with Iran.
But don't you think that the Gulf of Tonkin was largely contrived?
I think all the evidence certainly points to that. It was. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I wouldn't say what Bush is doing now is contrived. I would say that the Iranians are pushing our back up against the wall, and we have no choice to stop them from developing nuclear weapons. I would say this, the United States military is second to none. We have tremendous forces, ships, airplanes, bases in Europe, Bulgaria, Romania, Bahrain, Oman, Diego Garcia, Kuwait, Iraq. We've never had so many forces in one area on such a target. And hopefully that will that could impress the Iranians to give up their nuclear power and their nuclear research. And if not, I think our military is very capable of taking out the nuclear facilities. Remember, we're not trying to invade Iran. We're not trying to destroy their culture. We're not trying to destroy their cities or their people. We want them to stop developing nuclear weapons. That's what it's all about.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much, John. We really look forward to you keeping us appraised as this story of certainly unravels, but certainly as it develops here in the next few weeks and few months. God bless. We'll be talking to you real soon.
God bless. All the best to everybody.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly if you'd like a tape of our program, remember we do talk through the breaks, and there's so much material we cover during that time. If you'd like to get a tape of this complete program, why, of course, you could always call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And I gave up my open line Wednesday, which I always enjoy, because I felt the message that John has is very important to get out. And, of course, what we are seeing is certainly not only the geopolitical forces at work, but there is a spiritual component to this, because I believe God does rule in the affairs of men, and I believe that God brings judgment upon nations, and I believe that we are being set up for a terrible catastrophe, certainly not only militarily, but financially. America is the greatest debtor nation in the world today. We are having to borrow several $1 billion every day just to pay our bills, and if either China or Japan were to begin selling the dollar, the whole foundation of our currency would collapse. If the Chinese economy were to shut down, certainly because of lack of oil, this could plunge the world into chaos. And you certainly need to consider the financial implications of what's coming down the line, but consider the spiritual implications. Do you really believe that if God is just, he's not going to bring judgment on the United States for what we have done here, and for the paganism that we've established, and for the fact that we've taken God out of our schools and God out of our society, and we've really become a pagan society? So understand that we are involved certainly primarily in a spiritual battle, and it's being played out on a geopolitical battlefield. And everybody's looking at what's going on. And so much of what's going on really doesn't make sense. Because, of course, remember, we brought the Ayatollahs to power back in 1979 when the CIA toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollahs to power, which did not make sense in 79. And in fact, we read an article, got it recently, where this gentleman was interviewing the Shah of Iran, who said, "I was toppled. The British intelligence and Americans intentionally toppled me and brought the mullahs to power." Why would they have done that? In 1979, it didn't make any sense. But if you believe there's a cosmic timetable that is drawing us towards tremendous catastrophe, why, it would all very much make sense. And remember, certainly if they were to take out just one of our battleships, and hope and pray that this does not happen. But think what that would do to America, to our prestige throughout the world, to the families of course the men who would lose their lives in another war. The American people don't want a war, the Iranian people don't want a war, but the people who rule the world do. And believe me, you need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my talk, A Forbidden Secret. You need to get the DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Riddles in Stone, and Chris Pinto's talk he gave at our last conference entitled The Atlantis Connection. What does Atlantis have to do with this? Why, it has everything to do with it. Lost Atlantis was to be reconstituted right here in America, to lead the world towards democracy. You ever listen to the president talking about bringing democracy to the world? And why would he want to bring democracy? America's a republic. Our founding fathers hated the idea of democracy. And yet, of course, we're trying to bring democracy to the world, and you have to ask yourself, why? Well, ladies and gentlemen, things are going on in the world that most people don't understand. But if you were to actually watch my DVD on the Brotherhood of Darkness, The Forbidden Secret, and certainly the other things we've mentioned, you would have no more than most political science specialists anywhere in the world. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be back in a moment with the next program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And for the second hour this evening, we're having Barry Shamish, who is a Jewish patriot. He's an investigative reporter from Israel, and he worked there for many, many years and has researched the subversive background of so many of the Israeli leaders whose loyalty is not to Israel, but to the labor Zionists, who are certainly a force working within Israel. Whose loyalty is not to Judaism. In fact, they're intent upon destroying traditional Judaism. And, of course, the difficulty we have today is these people are in positions of power at the time when Israel certainly faces the worst danger I personally think it has ever faced. And that is, of course, this coming war with Syria and with Hezbollah and Hamas. And well, let's get Barry's thoughts on what's going on over there. Hi, Barry. How are you doing?
Good evening. Dr. Stan, you know that tomorrow, well, actually, I think it's already started, the sunrise in the east and whatever. We've got the meeting in Portugal with the quartet. Now, I sent you an email before the show. I don't know if you read it or did you?
Oh, well, no, I haven't been on my email since early this morning, so tell me what it says.
Well, I sent you, first of all, in Portugal today, the quartet is meeting, and this time they mean business.
Now, what is the quartet?
Well, it's the UN, the EU, Russia, and the United States.
All right.
I believe those are the four parties determined to destroy Israel, and they call themselves the Quartet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, I sent you a short little item about Tony Blair. Tony Blair is the envoy of the Quartet. He is going to bring peace to the Middle East, if you can believe this. Honest to goodness, he resigns as Prime Minister of England, and he doesn't even wait 12 seconds, and he's named the envoy of the quartet for the Middle East, and he shows up in Jerusalem that week. But nonetheless, there's something very, very significant going on, and if you don't understand this, you don't understand who's controlling the Middle East and Israel. Tony Blair will be in Portugal. He has probably landed in Portugal after visiting Rome and Spain. Please keep that in mind, folks. Rome and Spain.
Right, because Tony Blair more or less resigns from England. He's forced out. He's lost the support of even the liberals over in Great Britain, and certainly the conservatives are against him. They feel he betrayed his country, and so he is forced to leave. And immediately, you know, instead of going into retirement, that he's picked to become, what is he, the official envoy to the Middle East from the European Union? What is
it? No, from the quartet.
All right, fine.
I hear music. I guess I don't continue.
All right, well, you usually can go ahead until I tell you to, but right now we better just hold that thought until we get back here. Anyway, there is to be a major meeting in Portugal. Now, there's a meeting, certainly in Moscow just a couple of days ago, where we certainly see Kissinger and Harry Schultz, George Schultz. A lot of the people there were meeting with Putin. I think they're making agreements about what's going to happen. And now, of course, there's another meeting in Portugal, and we'll discuss that in just a moment. So what is going to happen when the quartet gets together?
Oh, well, I should mention, and I will mention, my goodness, Juan Carlos, who for years I've been writing about Juan Carlos, the former monarch of Spain who abdicated in favor of democracy, and he's running. Well, nothing has changed. He's more powerful than ever. Juan Carlos actually has a title. The title is Guardian of the Holy Places of Jerusalem. And you may think that's quaint. He doesn't think it's quaint one little bit. He actually believes that for the Vatican, his role in this world is to be the guardian of the holy places of Jerusalem. Juan Carlos, well, what can I tell you? He was in Portugal the day before, in other words, yesterday, Juan Carlos was in Portugal meeting the ministers of the quartet. Now, this is extremely worrying. Now, I want you to know that I'm not a major historian. I have help. I guess every major historian had help. Whatever. My help is Carolyn. She lives in Ontario. And I was speaking in Denver, and I was 1 minute away from getting on the podium. She phoned me 4 times to give me this information. The fact of the matter is it's really coming down now. It really is seriously coming down now. Naturally, Condoleezza Rice will be there representing the Council on Foreign Relations. You're right about Putin. Putin, you're absolutely right. Russia will be there. Here it comes, folks. This quartet, Russia, the EU, United States, the UN, they are just going to slam Israel. And I think I know how it's being done. Number one, this Benedict XVI, you know, I don't want to go ahead of the audience if they haven't been following these events the way I've been following them. But just so you know, I sent out an email, I guess, about 4 days ago. I hope you received it.
I did.
All right. Let's talk about Benedict and the 16th. Number one, previous to becoming the Pope, you know, I'm sure you know this, he was head of the Office of the Inquisition. Or did you know this?
Well, I knew he had a very high position there at the Vatican.
Yeah, the Office of the Inquisition.
Hold that thought, we'll be back in just a moment with Barry. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and here's Barry Shamus is giving his interpretation of what's going on, certainly with the geopolitics of certainly of the Near East, and there is to be this major meeting in Portugal between the United States and Russia and the United Nations, and who's the fourth part of it?
EU.
EU, okay. And first, so where does the Vatican fit into this?
It's their meeting. It's simply their meeting. Look, I know it's difficult for people to understand that Condoleezza Rice is beholden in any way to the Vatican, but I must remind you that after the Lebanon War of last summer, she held a meeting in Rome. And then at the end of that meeting in Rome, they decided that the forces that would separate Israel and Hezbollah would all, 99% of them, would come from Catholic Europe. Italy, Spain, France, Germany. That was Condoleezza Rice. She'll be there with Juan Carlos and Tony Blair. Well, not tomorrow. It's where I am, it's already today.
All right. So.
Now, look, this is very relevant, and I sent this out this week. Shimon Peres was not elected president of Israel. There was a lot of threats. There are things behind the scenes that we really, today anyways, we won't talk about. But he became president of Israel, and the Pope sent him a letter, and I quoted it in my latest email. What a letter from the Papal See to the new president of Israel. Now, I know that you read that letter and were shocked. In your own way, you must have been shocked by that letter. I'm kind of asking you, did it in any way affect you, the letter from the Pope to Paris?
Well, you wonder why the Pope is writing to Miss Paris, you know, obviously. I mean, here's the titular head of the Roman Catholic Church, who is not supposed to be involved in politics, but only certainly spreading the word of God and writing to the new president of Israel. And yet, of course, everything is power play, and certainly the Vatican is one of the three major power centers in the world today.
Oh, it may be in a league of its own. Now, what I quoted from that letter is that he called Paris's new position the most esteemed, here it is, I got the quote in front of me, the highest ranking position in your country. That is Pope Benedict telling Paris he has achieved the highest ranking position in your country. Well, I got news for you. That position is entirely ceremonial. It is about the lowest ranking position in the country. Where does he get off saying that Paris has taken over Israel? Now, look, he has advisors. When he sends off a letter, he is diplomatically a lot more correct than that. What is he saying that for? Now, I think we should jump into the fact that Paris's acceptance speech was shocking. Simply shocking. Now, the most shocking thing about the acceptance speech is that he used the words in Hebrew, Legaresh. It means to get rid of the territories. Paris told the nation that as president, he would be getting rid of Judea and Samaria. That is some acceptance speech, let me tell you. It's a scandal, but let me tell you, the Pope sent a letter off that said Paris's duty is to bring peace with the Palestinians. And why? You know, really, why? Why would the Vatican be sending Pope Shimon Peres's letter? How many years have I told you folks out there, Shimon Peres is nothing but a dirty, slimy spy for the Vatican? How many years have I been saying this?
Well, because the amazing thing is the policies of this small little elite group that really has run Israel for so many years is, let's give away all of the land Israel has. If we just give away enough land, we'll get peace. It's sort of like feeding a tiger meat, hoping he's going to become a vegetarian, and he just keeps eating up more of your friends. So, I mean, what's going on from a rational point of view doesn't really make sense.
From a blackmail point of view, it gets better, and we'll talk about that shortly. I kind of planned this show to give you a little bit, by the way, of the Return of the Giants, since I've been ignoring that. But let's stick with this one right now.
Let's just stick with this, because I think it's an important subject, and I think it's important that the listener understands that the real policies of this small little clique, who do not represent the Israeli people or traditional Zionism at all, they have a different agenda, and they want to give away literally all of the land of Israel and put Israel into a totally indefensible position, and they're doing a pretty good job of it right now. That's why, of course, they gave away Gaza, that could now be used as a base for Hamas to lob sending missiles into the southern part of Israel. That's why they want to give away Judea and Samaria, which will cut Israel right in two and give the terrorists the ability to be able to launch their missiles directly on Tel Aviv and certainly on the airfields, the Israeli defense force, the military air defense airfields. None of this makes sense from a military point of view if you wanted to preserve Israel.
All right. Now here, by the way, I finally ordered from Lulu.com my own copy of Bye-Bye Gaza. And in preparation for the show tonight, I read a chapter on the Vatican.
A chapter of your own book now?
I've never seen it before.
You've never seen it before?
Nope. It arrived 2 days ago. It's a beautiful book, by the way. I got to tell you, it's really one of my best books, hands down. Okay, I'll plug it now, and then we'll go to what I read. If you want Bye-Bye Gazza, go to LULU.com. You'll see a thing that says search. It's a box. Write in my name, C-H-A-M-I-S-H. You'll get Bye-Bye Gazza. Now, I read the Vatican chapter just for tonight's show, and it's shocking. First of all, I'm very impressed with myself. I've never read this book before. Sharon, in a secret meeting with U.S. envoys in Rome, November of 2003, promised to remove Gaza and parts of the West Bank before the end of 2005. That came from ABC News. It also came from my book, but Sharon, now guess where this meeting was held? It was held in Rome. He met with U.S. envoys in Rome, November 2003, and promised to give back Gaza and the northern West Bank. That is why Sharon got rid of Gaza. Folks, you got to ask yourself what U.S. envoys were doing in Rome. You got to ask the same question about this meeting in Portugal. Now, look, Portugal happens to be the president of the EU right now. That's why the meeting is being held in Portugal. But people are showing up in Spain, which is, of course, the home of Juan Carlos, and Rome, which is the home of Benedict the 16th. Now, I added something to my email this week that really should be understood. Who was Benedict the 15th? Benedict the 15th was installed as the Pope of Rome on August 14th of 1914 when World War I broke out. He was the Pope of the War. He was the War Pope. Benedict the 16th is going to be the new War Pope, and he did not choose his name accidentally. He knew what he was doing.
Well, I really believe we are moving into another major conflict, which will involve not only Israel, but America and most of the countries there in the Middle East. So I share your concern.
Look, if people don't understand one basic phenomenon, the Vatican is pulling the strings on this one. Well, who knows what else they're pulling the strings on. They're certainly pulling the strings on illegal immigration to the United States and the slow capitalization of America and things like that, which you should be concerned about. Right now, I mean, I'm not concerned about that, frankly. I'm concerned right now that they are pumping up a war to destroy Israel. Look, I have a friend in Israel. She's a doctor. Her name is Dr. Daisy Stern. And in fact, I'm going to New York, and her son arranged lectures for me. We'll do that later. The fact of the matter is she's right about something. When Hamas defeated the PLO in Gaza, it was extremely widely reported that they took over the intelligence bureau of the PLO. In other words, they got the highest level intelligence about who was playing ball with the New World Order. Simple as that. The people in Israel, the Shabak, our secret services, employed PLO terrorists to kill Israelis. This has been going on for a whole long time.
And this is what the intelligence that the Hamas had gotten showed, and the fact that the CIA was working with Hamas, and certainly the Israeli was working with Hamas as well, weren't they?
Well, let's put it this way: Hamas could not have been too involved because they're using this information to blackmail Israel and the PLO. Look, if Hamas has got this information, they spread it around. Iran's got it too right now. So does Syria. This was a major blow, a huge blow to the intelligence services, and I'm glad they had this blow, frankly. I think it's a wonderful thing to expose these people. You'll be exposing Barak, you'll be exposing Chaim Ramon, you'll be exposing Peres, that is for sure. Olmert, that is for sure. The fact of the matter is Olmert did something absolutely fantastic this week. Did you, well, I'm sure you know, but the deal, it was an amnesty deal. Olmert offered not only amnesty, by the way, to the most wanted terrorists in the West Bank.
In fact, you're talking about the release, I think, about 250 Palestinian terrorists.
Generally,
and he's going to give them up without getting anything in return. And supposedly, you know, this is to show his goodwill. But after all, if you don't have to release the terrorists, you can't keep the war going. In a similar manner, it was a few years ago, and they released over 400 Palestinian terrorists to get back the bodies of three dead Israelis. Now, from a logical point of view, why would they have done something like
because
that?
Because they're being blackmailed. These are terrorists who killed Binyamin. Well, look, they were working with the Shabak, and to keep their mouths shut, they're being bought off. The deal was unbelievable. If they showed up with a weapon, a rifle, they got $15,000. Oh, you didn't know that detail, huh? Well, here's a detail. If they showed up with an M16 or Kalashnikov, they got $15,000. If they showed up with a mere handgun, they only got $6,000. They were showing up with both. They were getting $23,000, these 250 top terrorists. And they were laughing. They were laughing. All reports say they were laughing because as soon as they turned to those rifles, they would be given new rifles. Olmert was not only feeding terrorism, he was giving them the money to live well in Judea and Samaria, in the Palestinian Authority. $15,000 for a rifle is pretty good business. It's also insanity. It's not diplomacy, it's insanity.
Well, now, there's no question at all, of course, that right now, of course, the whole idea that they put forward is, well, we have to help the Fatah so that they'll fight Hamas and we get them fighting one another, then they won't fight Israel. But, of course, you know the Fatah hates Israel, and all those weapons that they're giving to Fatah eventually will either be turned over to Hamas or, in another way, will be used to kill Israelis. So why would you be financing your enemies?
Because you're being blackmailed. Now, this is, again, don't overestimate the rivalry between Hamas and Fatah. Fatah lost in the Gaza Strip, and I mean they lost. Their soldiers ran away. They actually outnumbered and overarmed Hamas, and they just walked away from this fight. They didn't feel like fighting. So you have to ask this second question. Was this whole thing staged? And if it was staged, to give, again, as I said before, a massive amount of deep intelligence to Hamas, resulting ultimately in Fatah being strengthened, in the worst terrorists, and again, these terrorists they claim killed Binyamin Kahana, one terrorist in Hamas they claim was killed or arrested. Look, her name was Tali Hatwell, and this is not the time to say who she was.
No,
right,
hold
now.
That, hold that thought, Barry. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry Shamus is just expressing his concern because the Olmert government has released 250 hardline terrorists, supposedly. They're not supposed to have had blood on their hands, but who's to say? But they're going to release 250 terrorists so they can go back and attack Israel again. Why would you do something like that unless you're going to get something in return? And a similar matter some years ago, why they released over 400 Palestinian terrorists in return for the bodies of three dead Israelis. Why would you do something like that? If it's illogical, there has to be another reason, and that is they want to keep this terrorist movement going. When you understand that, it all begins to make sense. Go ahead, Barry.
Where's the $15,000 per rifle coming from? Okay, where's that money coming from? Look, I'm going to repeat this. there's a meeting. Please, everybody, look on the internet. Your media is not going to tell you about this meeting in Portugal taking place today. But I assure you, Israel is going to suffer mightily from this meeting. Mightily. If one doesn't understand the role of the Vatican in its Middle East diplomacy, one doesn't understand that they want Jerusalem back, that Shimon Peres is their agent. He just became president. The Pope just sent a letter, a miserable letter, really, beseeching him, but it's really warning him that he is going to continue giving concessions to all the Arabs and congratulating him for achieving that most esteemed position in his country. All of this is the Vatican. Juan Carlos is in Portugal before the meetings take place. Blair is in Rome and Spain before he arrives in Portugal. Folks, this is the real thing. This is the Vatican. It's newest crusade. And by the way, I have a CD-ROM called Zion First, the Vatican's Crusade Against Jerusalem. Go to my website and order it. My website, you can get there just by going barrychamish.com. That's www.barrychamish.com and ordering this thing, and you'll understand what's going on in Portugal tomorrow.
Do you really believe that there is going to be a war between Israel and Syria and Israel and Hamas and Hezbollah sometime this summer or not?
Well, I'll tell you, if Israel doesn't play ball, Israel is going to go to war. So long as Israel caves in and goes against its people's will, they can hold off a war another day, another week, another month. The minute they stand firm for their own defense, well, that may be the spark that sends the missiles flying all over Israel. We don't know what is going on that's keeping Israel away from this war. But Israel is surrounded on five borders. And when that war breaks out, it's not going to be like any other war. It's going to be a war where thousands of missiles are going to land on Tel Aviv and on the communication centers of the IDF and on its air bases. It's not going to be like any war Israel has ever fought. It's going to be a war they lose. And I might add, Israel is extremely worried because the number of young men refusing to serve in the country has passed the 25% mark. You have one half of the pilots are refusing to serve in the Air Force. The army is breaking down. Slowly but surely, the youth of Israel are deserting that army.
Well, is this though because they feel that the army and the Air Force are not being used to defend Israel?
They're sick of the army being used to uproot settlers from their homes. They have no heart to serve in an army. 11% are going to yeshivas. 4% are leaving the country. Others claim they're sick. A lot of these, shockingly, are religious youth who used to be the most devoted soldiers of all. They hate the IDF.
By IDF, you mean, of course, the Israel Defense Force. And we're going to be back here in just a moment with Barry. And, of course, if you don't have a military that made up of young, idealistic men are willing to fight and, if necessary, die to defend their country, then, of course, you have no possibility of winning a war. And this is the first time you've ever had this amount of discontent in the Israeli military. But then this is the first time you've ever had traitors to Israel in positions of power. We're talking about Olmert and Barak and Peres. The men who lead Israel today, have no loyalty to Israel. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Barry Shamish, and we're talking about the situation in Israel. We're talking about the meeting that's being held in Portugal today and will probably be held for a couple of days there as the leaders of the EU, certainly of the United States, of Russia and the United Nations meet to determine the future of Israel. Go ahead, Barry.
Well, I want to ask you, did you tune into the movie that I presented on my latest email called The Ringworm Children?
No, I didn't, but I've read your material on it, and I know the story of the horrible treatment of the Yemeni children, the Sephardic children. They're exposed to massive amounts of irradiation simply as part of a population control experiment.
No, it was not part of population control. It was part of many. It was part of an experiment to see what happens when you try to literally destroy the brains of a whole people. Please do watch the movie. Nothing I can write can possibly. Well, you have to see. These are photos, archive photos from the 40s. Many people have written me saying that movie has just changed them. The movie is now on the internet. And by the way, I assume that has something to do with me. I rewrote the Ringworm Children on July 8th. On July 10th, the movie appeared all over the internet and, by the way, with English subtitles in entirety. And anyone who has not seen the movie, go to my website, go to the article section, that's BarryShamish.com, double-click that movie. It's going to change your life.
I really would like you to tell our listeners about the Ringworm Children.
In the early 1950s, Shimon Peres, our new president, was the director of the Israeli Atomic Commission. He got ultimately 7 X-ray machines from the U.S. Army, and they took all Sephardic children from that generation, 108,000 of them, and subjected them to massive doses of gamma rays through their scalps, supposedly to cure scalpel ringworm. But in fact, the amount of radiation was deadly, and thousands died. 6,000 died within 1 year. Today, these poor, poor people...
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry was just telling us the story of the ringworm children, and this was many years ago when Shimon Peres was in charge of the Atomic Energy Commission in Israel, and they took over 100,000 of these Sephardic children, and they submitted their brains to this tremendous amount of radiation, supposedly to treat ringworm in the scalp, but it was really... to see how much damage, how much radiation they could absorb. And did you say 6,000 of these children were dead?
Well, it's a movie. 6,000 died within a year.
6,000 of the children died. You've never heard this story. What year was this, actually?
It was between 1950 and 56, approximately. Now, keep in mind, I always describe seeing this movie. I've never had this opportunity. Thanks to YouTube, when people read something, it suddenly shows up in the air. And this is what happened. I wrote the piece in answer to a very stupid website trying to denigrate my findings about the Ringworm Children, which was, of course, the highlight of my book, Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust. The last chapter was the Ringworm Children. Now, this movie is now on the internet in its entirety. And I called my latest article Vindication, and I'll explain why. One was, now the world can see this movie and see I was not kidding around. All right? Now, I watched it again, so did my wife. We both watched this movie, and it's way more shocking, actually, the third and fourth time to see these children with their haircuts and their scalps with marking pens dividing up the skull, and each part of the skull gets a certain amount of radiation, and it's just shocking. The children had to put balls between their knees so they wouldn't move, and you have to see this movie. Now, when you understand that our president is the only living director of the Ringworm Children Experiment. He was the director of the Defense Ministry when this was going on as well. We can get Paris out of power. We have a way. Now, I've got a very, very deep philosophical problem in that Israel, the worst enemies of the Jews are going to use this material to attack Jews, but I don't see any choice right now. Paris is president. They're meeting in Portugal. Israel's going down the drain. The least we can do is expose these people, maybe fight back. It's the only strategy I know, but it's really hardball, and you do play into the hands of the anti-Semites, but clearly that's when not... I can't avoid it. I simply can't avoid it.
Well, Barry, how many... do we have any idea what happened to the rest of the people? You started to tell us that, some of the survivors of this terrible, almost something like Dr. Mengele might have done over in Hitler's Germany. I mean, what happened to the rest of the people?
They're alive in Israel. They live... Look, one of the facets of this, I always thought that Moroccan women didn't have hair. If you grew up in Israel, there are so many Moroccan women with thin, thin hair. I assumed they just—it was a characteristic of the people that they didn't have hair. I didn't realize their hair was burnt out by these radiations. Their children have beautiful hair, but what's happening right now is their children are turning 30, and they're getting the same growth all over their body that their parents have.
I mean, are these tumors of some sort?
Pardon me?
Are these tumors?
They're gross, there's epilepsy, there's all kinds of things, all mentioned in this movie. Now, again, Moroccan of this generation grew up without the tumors until they turned about 30, and now they have got them. This is something that passes through the generations. They ruined the Sephardi people in Israel, these labor Zionists, led by Shimon Peres. They wrecked the Sephardi people of Israel. Now, this is not an easy story to tell, and there are times when it's very hard for me to tell it, because the worst enemies of the Jews will jump on this. But what choice is there right now? First of all, it's the truth. And frankly, I'm not in favor of covering up the truth, no matter how bad it is. You just tell it, and you see where the pieces fall, but you have to tell the truth. So I would have done it, I guess, anyways, I suppose. But the fact remains that Israel has a lot of enemies, and I'm feeding them. And I'm torn. I'm actually torn with this, but I think I'm doing the right thing. But the moral dilemma is so profound. Most Jews cave in and say, we can't let the anti-Semites know this. And I said that has caused the Holocaust. That attitude has caused pogroms. That attitude has seen the disappearance probably of 80% of the Jews of the world have disappeared through the Holocaust, pogroms, assimilation. I'm just not following. I'm not following the Jewish point of view. I don't hide the facts. We got to be truthful, and no matter how much it hurts, we got to get these labor Zionists out of the Jewish bloodstream, thoroughly out. What they did, you're right. It was Dr. Mengele. That's all it was. Go to my website, people, and look at this movie. Go into a section called Articles. Then double-click this movie, and you will... It's about 45 minutes long, and you won't sleep at night after you see this thing.
All right, because this is Destroy the Ringworm Children. Over 100,000 children were used in this macabre experiment.
Now, I was in contact with the director, David Bohassan. He admired my work on the Rabin assassination, and he was really, really very good to me. And that's why I wrote about the Ringworm Children 4 years ago. The film came out in the year 2001, and, well, I covered it. Let's just leave it at that. And believe me, I'm not being a champion for the Sephardic people. This was just bad. This was just a horrible crime involving so many people. 108,000 children? Come on. It's beyond my capability of thinking that anyone calling himself a Jew would do this. But these people aren't Jews, and that's why my book is called Shabtai Tzvi Lieber Zionism and the Holocaust, because these people do not follow the Jewish Torah. They follow the opposite of the Jewish Torah, led by a phony messiah of the 17th century named Shabtai Tzvi, and they're capable of killing anyone who does not accept them as a messiah. I know this sounds weird. My book is on lulu.com. I think it's time people who don't understand what's happening in this world start reading that book. I certainly did. In the last 2 days, I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
This is your one on Bye-Bye Gaza now?
Bye-Bye Gaza.
All right.
Oh, no. Shabtai Tzvi Lieber Zionism
in
the Holocaust.
All right.
You're right. Bye-Bye Gaza, I started reading 2 days ago.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, I think it's so important. And you certainly go to lulu.com and you can pull down Barry's books. And fascinating reading, fascinating insight, because certainly Barry has been there. He's lived through many of these issues. He's researched them, and certainly is an investigative journalist who was really forced to leave Israel, and very, very fortunate for us that he's here in the United States to give us part of the story we would never hear through the regular channels. Well, let's get back to what's going to happen over there in Portugal. You think it's going to be a sellout as far as Israel is concerned?
Oh, that's a given. Well, this is it. The world's nations are against Israel. The Vatican has arranged it. Whether it's scriptural or it's all a coincidence, the world's nations are against Israel right now. That's a given. Now, I don't know what the end result of Portugal is going to be, but I assure you, Israel gets absolutely nothing out of it. And at the same time, the Israeli government, those crooks like Olmert Barak and Peres, who are running the government, are being blackmailed by Hamas to give terrorists the freedom. Well, the poor Israeli people being run by this mafia, they don't understand anything. Not a thing. They don't understand why they can't get rid of Olmert. They don't understand why an election won't make a difference. It's that simple. Now, to bring up, by the way, the other side, I brought up something else in my recent email that is of significance. Now, I don't know the first one, but I received an email when Arafat was in France. Yasser Arafat. And he was being treated in a French hospital for what the world did not know what it was, quite frankly. They thought Israel poisoned him. I received an amazing email from a hospital worker who said, "We were all told to shut up. Arafat has AIDS. He's dying of AIDS. And they won't let us tell anyone." Well, I reprinted that email on the day that he entered the French hospital and finished his tests. And lo and behold, I was right. Arafat died of AIDS. And who told us this? None other than Ahmad Jibril, head of security for the Hamas now today. He said in this quote that he was in Damascus, and he asked the people there, "Why are we fighting? The Israelis killed Yasser Arafat. Why aren't we conducting a campaign to expose this, to get even?" And he was told, "Ahmad Arafat, the French gave us the medical report. Arafat died of AIDS. We don't want us to get out. Just be happy that the scum is gone and you got the plague out of your system. This came from Ahmad Jibril. And I'll tell you, I called the article vindication, and if you ask me, that's pretty good vindication. Arafat died of AIDS.
Well, I wouldn't be at all surprised, and all of the billions of dollars he'd stolen from the Palestinian people, well, I don't think he could take it with him.
Well, let's put it this way. Those billions of dollars bought a lot of little boys for him. And I guess one of them gave him, one of them paid him back. He died of AIDS.
Well, I think he was an unscrupulous individual, and yet, didn't he get a Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah, sure. So did Shimon Peres, except Peres had to bribe the Nobel Committee with $100,000 to get it. I think we talked about this as well, that he felt left out, and he bribed, his wife's name is Mona, his name was Jorge, whatever, he gave him $100,000 to bribe the Nobel Committee to give him a peace prize as well. It's meaningless stuff. This is not what I pay attention to. It's like the Academy Award. If a movie wins Best Picture, I don't go to see it.
Well, anyway, Chris, I really am very, very concerned about what is going to happen, in the Near East. And, I think it's only really a matter of a very short period of time before Israel is at war with Syria and its neighbors. But aren't there people within the Israeli military who are loyal to the country, who would really like to be able to win? And are they willing to stand up to Olmert and the other traitors?
Not high up. Now, here's the problem. The IDF last week released its survey of Israeli generals, and it was very depressing. This is something I have spoken to you about. And I served the Israeli army for 13 years, regular and reserve service. And I saw the worst possible officers being advanced. And the good officers, the ones we liked, would stop dead at about major. They wouldn't go beyond that. And I noted that really, really screwed up, scandal-ridden people were not removed from positions. And it turns out that the Israeli generals right now are so incompetent. Well, they blew the war last summer, but there's no way to replace them. You can't replace the generals. It's a system. Promotes a certain class of officer all the way to general, you can't change that system overnight. You're still stuck with all these incompetent generals. That's what you got in Israel. That army is totally demoralized. I don't know how long it could keep on having loyal soldiers with this system. Yes, you have very loyal soldiers all the way up to captain, major. But once you get to colonel, it gets pretty flimsy up there.
What a great tragedy. And, Chris, unfortunately, sometimes we find out the most incompetent get into key positions in any bureaucracy, but especially, of course, with modern-day military. And certainly we find this in our own military, where many times very capable men are simply gotten rid of. And those who are yes men will go along with the globalists and their plans for the New World Order. They're the ones who get to be the four-star admirals and the four-star generals.
Well, all I can say is the army I served in under Menachem Begin with Raful Eitan as our chief of staff was not the army that exists today. And all I can say is my son and his friends are about to be drafted, and for the first time in my life, If I could control it, I would not allow him to risk his life for Ehud Olmert or Shimon Peres, or to take a chance that he might remove Jews from their homes. I would not want to serve in the Israeli army. And by the way, I guess I'm joining a lot of people. As I told you before, this latest survey shows that the Israeli army now has a peak of over 25% of Israeli youth will not serve in the army anymore. I'll say it again, this is a draft army. Three quarters are going in, but it's sticking fast.
Well, because you have to have people who are motivated, who believe in what they're doing, and are willing to give their life for the country. And this has always been the way it was with the Israeli country, and certainly it was with Americans. But I think in both nations, we're beginning to see just increasing disillusionment, and with very, very good reason.
Well, I'll tell you, why not bring up America? There was a football player who was killed in Afghanistan.
You're talking about Pat Tillman, of course.
Yes.
And well, of course, the government is concealing all the facts about his death, and we have to ask, why is the government concealing the important facts about Pat Tillman's death?
Because he was flagged by his own men.
Well, but why would they have done that? Certainly, he was not an officer. He was the corporal or something.
Running them too hard. It doesn't matter. He was flagged by his own men. And that is what worries me about Israel. I fought the Lebanon War. I heard rumors that actually happened every now and then. We lost a major general on the third day of the war, and I heard rumors that he was set up to die. This was back in 1982. Right now we have a situation in the army where the soldiers are not just demoralized, they're capable of killing their own officers.
Well, of course, that's what, of course, the sort of thing you had in the Russian army, you know, by the end of the First World War. And the soldiers just refused to carry out orders. And that, of course, the Russian Revolution. But then, of course, the tragedy that followed that.
All I hope for is that when Israel goes, it isn't a Holocaust. When Israel goes, at least let the Jews go to America or somewhere else. I'll tell you something right now. Today in Portugal, Israel's final death warrant is going to be signed, and nobody is paying attention to this. Nobody. There's so few of us out there who care enough about the country to follow the events as they're taking place. I'm very lucky. I have informants, because of the way I've been writing, I have informants who are actually following this. I simply give them credit where credit is due, and I thank them for helping me along. But we are such a tiny, tiny percentage of the people who watch the news and who care about the world as it exists. And they seem to be, well, I don't know if they're flowing in my direction, but there aren't many of us out there.
Well, will Javier Solana be at this meeting in Portugal, do you know?
Sure he will.
And of course, this is really one of the most sinister men in the world. And if you haven't been following the career of Javier Solana, why, you really need to, and get some of our material put forward by Constance Cumby.
Right. Right. Constance Cumby's a nice lady. I was on her show last week, and she's a very sweet lady. Her only fault may be that if the enemies of Israel make a claim, she automatically assumes it's wrong. I say they make a claim by looking for the weaknesses in the fabric of the Jewish people.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Barry Shammers. Barry, we're out of time. God bless you, and we'll look forward to talking to you again, if not this week, certainly next week.
I look forward to it as well.
Thanks so very much.
See you then. Bye.
All right, fine. Well, certainly, Barry, we'd like to get his perspective, certainly this meeting that's being held in Portugal, and there you're going to see Javier Solana, who, of course, is the most powerful man in the world today. In fact, he got his power due to several directives that came out of the European Union, each one with a prefix 666. Maybe that's just coincidence, but if you'd like to know more about him, we have a 4-tape set on Constance Cumby of interviews with her, going into a great deal of detail with Javier Solana. And, of course, if you haven't seen the DVD we have with Constance called The Emergence, we certainly recommend that, either DVD or video. So there's so much that's going on today, but I feel that we're moving towards a climax in history, and I fear for what's going to befall Israel, but I fear what's going to befall the people of Iran and our forces over there in the Persian Gulf, because I believe that we are setting our carriers up, our aircraft carriers, to be destroyed. We have people who have an entirely different agenda, an entirely different loyalty, working behind the scenes in our government. You need to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, The Forbidden Secret, the two DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, The Riddles in Stone, the DVD, The Atlantis Connection. And then let me suggest the DVDs put out by our good friend Joe Schimmel. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. Johanna Michelson's 4-tape set, or at least 2 of the 4-tape sets in that 4-tape set. It's called The Supernatural. And we do carry Johanna Michelson's book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. The Beautiful Side of Evil. But to begin to put this all into perspective, let me suggest a book by Malachi Martin, Hostages of the Devil. Hostages of the Devil. And then the 4-tape set of my interviews with Malachi Martin. We think that will give you tremendous insight into the geopolitics behind what's going on, how the popes are selected. And of course, this is coming from the writings of a Jesuit priest. One interview in our 4-tape set describes how Pope John Paul II was picked, and you'll never look at the world with the same eyes again. The 4-tape set is designed for Catholics, but we will even sell it. We'll even let the Protestants get a copy of that tape set. We think it's so vitally important. Understand, we're involved in a political battle, but it's really a spiritual battle. A spiritual battle that's being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. We hope that most people will begin making preparations spiritually and fiscally and financially for the very difficult times that lie ahead. If you have not yet laid in a supply of emergency food and you'd like to get a free catalog, give us a call. If you'd like to get our health catalog or regular catalog, if you'd like to get some free newsletters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. But let me also suggest that that you go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there live 3 hours a day. Actually, you can listen 9 hours a day to our Global Star feed to the satellite. It's available on Telstar 5, and if you need more information on that, we can get it for you. But the important thing is that you get other people to begin to listen to our programs there on the Internet, to click onto the section on videos. We have live videos people can watch without charge, and we want you to begin to understand what's really going on. The website is RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.